I'm sorry, I'm just waiting for the X-Lax to kick in.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
There it is. Okay.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Give me just a few minutes. This shouldn't take very long.
Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. That's what it is. You feeling okay? Speaking to a couple of my friends last night, and I don't do that often because the friend pool is not all that deep. I'm in shallow water as far as that pool is concerned, but I did speak to a few of them, just happenstance. And I realized it kind of doesn't even matter what age you are anymore. Everybody's complaining about something health-wise. Not terrifically horrible things necessarily, but it always comes up in conversation. And when I was young, I used to listen to my grandparents incessantly talk about their maladies.
Oh, my back today. I can't make it down the stairs like I used to.
All that kind of stuff with that little accent, that little gruff little accent. And as I got older, I did start hearing more of that, but I also started hearing it from younger people too, people in their 20s and 30s. Who are also complaining about these chronic situations. And again, not horrible things, but just like, hi, Betty. And by the way, who's named Betty anymore? Not many people. What happened to Betty? Hi, Betty. How you doing today? Great. My back, though. My back, still got some problems with my back. Had some trouble yesterday. Got to go to the acupuncturist, to the therapist. I got problems with my back. I said, wow. You're 28 years old, you got problems with your back. And it's coming up in conversation, oddly enough. And I talk to other people, well, how you doing? The allergies kicked up last night. I've got allergies every day of my life. I'm better. I feel better now. But man, the allergies last night. Allergy? What are you talking about your allergies for? I didn't ask you. I'd say, hi, how are you? And by the way, tell me about your allergic reactions, or allergic, which is not a word. Or not pronounced that way, certainly. how did that come up? How did you get that in there? Why was it important for you to tell me about your allergies in the course of conversation? Nothing to do with allergies. Where did that come from? Where does it come from? Everybody's got something that they deal with. The shoulder's getting stiff again. Why? I don't know. Just that's my thing. We've all got our thing. How often do you speak to somebody, you know, bump into them in the street or something, hit him with your car, whatever the case may be, and say, how you doing, Joe? I'm fine. Life's beautiful. Couldn't be happier. Everything's great. Fine. Then you get into the conversation about half an hour later, and all of a sudden, yeah, I got to see the doctor every 2 months. I got to cut down on the medications, and yeah, I've been feeling a little woozy and stuff and a little dizzy when I do that, and I can't walk upstairs as much as I used. You just told me you're feeling great. You're at the top of your game. Everything's beautiful in your life. But probe a little deeper, and you start to get under the skin, and you find out that layer of, yeah, everything's fine, is a very thin layer. We all have something that we deal with. We all do. And you know who's made it possible? The doctors. Oh, the doctors. They all gather together in the room and say, what kind of diseases can we come up with that we can tag on people? Because we don't want anybody walking around feeling like they're totally healthy and absolutely nothing is wrong with them whatsoever. That would be horrible. We've got to make sure that they can come into our doctor's office on a regular basis so that we can make tons of money off of them, or more importantly, off the insurance companies. So here's the deal, doctors. Nobody's ever healthy. Do you understand that? And no matter what it is, when they come into your doctor's office, you make sure they come back in 3 months for a follow-up. I don't care what it's for. Just use that word follow-up all the time. I want these patients in here every 3 months like clockwork. Otherwise, we're out of business. We need their money. We need their insurance money. So every 3 months, you get their asses in here. And if there's nothing wrong with them, then damn it, you make something up. And you make it good. And you make it something they need medication for. Because all these pretty girls that are coming in with pharmaceutical sales, I want them coming back. They take me out to lunch and we can have sex if we want to. Make it work, people. Make it work. That's what they do. I swear it's what they do. When I visit my doctor, she doesn't just say, how you doing? Fine. All right, let me check your ears. Breathe for me. Stick out your tongue. Okay, bye. I'll see you in a year. They don't do that anymore. And it's no, I'll see you in a year. Are you kidding me? No, there's no see you in a year. It's almost like, can you come back tomorrow? Can you call your insurance company to see if you can come back tomorrow? It's amazing. They find stuff. She sits there and she asks me like 50 questions. And it's almost like she's trying to find something that's wrong with me. My word isn't good enough for her. I have a female doctor, quite obviously. I refer to her as her. She's a her. And she just probes me, man, verbally, until she finds something. And when she does, she latches onto it. Well, how long have you had this problem? You have this problem? Your parents have this problem? Is it debilitating? Can you do that? Can you do it? Can you raise that? Can you raise your arm? Can you put it down? Can you bring it up? Can you do ice? Can you give me a sandwich? Can you pick up my dry cleaning? And then they start probing and they make it sound worse than it is. You know, yeah, I got a little bit of a shoulder pain, but it comes and goes. It's fine. It's not a big deal. It's not debilitating in the least. Well, what do you call not debilitating? Are you able to bowl? I mean, can you lift things? You know, sometimes those turns into other things. I want to give you a complete set of x-rays, MRI, CAT scans. We're going to put you in a tube. We're going to do stuff. We're going to laser your face off. Because we want to check this out. We want to make sure it's nothing serious because things can be. So, doctor, I just did a little bit of a pain. I think it's because, like, I picked something up. It was too heavy. And maybe a little bit of a sprain. It'll go away. And it could be a sprain. It could be some kind of cancer. I really don't know. It could be something. We really should be testing this to its fullest extent. I want to send you out for an MRI, and I want to send you to rehabilitation hospital for 5 years, and I want you to see a parole officer. I said, what are you talking about? What's a big deal? They make more out of it than anybody else does. They're trying to find something wrong with you. How's your diet, Ron? Why does it look like I'm on one? I mean, I don't have a diet. I mean, I don't eat a lot of fried foods and tons of sugar or anything like that. I mean, eat as well as I can, but now why? Well, you know, if you went on a diet and lost some pounds, you wouldn't have that problem anymore. What problem? My wife? No. We're talking about you have borderline high blood pressure. Oh, it's on the border, is it? Maybe my blood pressure gets a little high because I'm coming in to visit you every 3 months. And I'm just like nervous about what things you're going to make up or what things you'd find in me. Ron, we got your blood test back and we've got some bad news. It's good. And that's the bad news for us. Good news for you. Bad news for us. We're trying to find something we can make some more money off of you on. And to be honest with you, it's a little difficult at this time. But we have faith. You're going to break down someday. And when you do, I'll be here to rape you of all your money, and that insurance company that represents you, good luck to them. I'm taking them. I'm taking them for everything they got. Really? You know, when you're 50 years old, Ron, you should start having colonoscopies. Oh, you mean when I'm 50 years old, I should be paying you a lot of money for colonoscopies. Is that what you mean to say? Ron, that's very cold and very heartless. We're actually very concerned about your health. My doctor actually says to me, and it's a very, very good line, and I buy it a lot. She says to me, my only purpose here is to make you as healthy as possible. That is so cool. Did they tell you that in the last board meeting, to tell that to everybody? My only purpose is to make you as healthy as possible. Is that your purpose, really? Or did the people in this medical group say to you, we need to get as much money as we can from these people? Is that why you schedule 20 appointments for the same time of day? Ron, are you available to come in 3 months at 8:20 in the morning on a Monday? I think so. Okay, we'll pencil you in here. That'll be the 20th person we have scheduled for 8:20 in the morning on Monday. Why do you do that? Why do you schedule so many people? It's the medical group. They want to get us in, you know, as many people as we can see. It's more money for us. Do people get commission or something? What is that about? Or if they don't do that, they schedule the appointments 35 seconds apart. You know, can you come in Monday 8:20:30, like 30 seconds past the hour of 8:20? Why that specific? Why don't they just tell you to come in at a particular time and cut down on the waiting? Like, if my appointment is 8:20, why don't I just show up at 9:30 and then go right in? I mean, I don't understand. Well, because we have 20 other people coming in at 9:30 waiting to go right in. We can't do that, Ron. I don't understand. It's demeaning. It's demeaning to have an appointment and then to just sit there and wait for it to happen. It's demeaning. Do you understand that? There's a certain psychological aspect to going to a doctor's office besides the physical aspect. The fact that you are asked to hurry up and show up at a location so you can sit and wait for a long time. It's not right. It's demeaning. And we've all been in the position of saying, well, if I have to sit here and waste my time where I could be out making money, I'm going to start charging the medical group for the time that I'm just sitting in the waiting room. Yeah, we've all thought that and we've all tried to do it. And you know, it just doesn't work. It sounds good. It sounds very empowering, but we don't do it because it would be weird. It would just be weird. I would someday like to have the balls to actually sit at my desk and make out an invoice to the medical insurance, to the clinic place, the medical group, and say, you owe me $300. I sat in your waiting room for 13 minutes. I earn on the average of about $300 every 13 minutes. Which is not true, by the way. I'm just making this up, but they don't know. So I'm charging you $300. I showed up on time. You didn't keep your end of the appointment, and I do have a 24-hour waiting or cancellation clause. We didn't get that. Well, I don't get half the things you give me either. Anyway, as you can see, I'm a little disturbed about that. But I don't even remember what I was talking about originally, and that's pretty much the way things go. So I think it's important for me at times just to be quiet.
Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet.
Sorry.
Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
You're welcome. At least they're polite. Something. You know, You know what it's like, don't you? I think you do. I think you do. I got involved in a little road rage yesterday. I was raging on the road. You have those people, you're driving on a highway, and the guy behind you is just like tearing through traffic. They're going like 80 miles an hour. You're going speed limit, which is 65 usually. And they come right up on your bumper. Right up on your bumper. They don't touch your bumper, but they're about half a car length away, and which is dangerous at highway speeds. And you know they're doing it because they're intimidating you to pull over to the right so that they can, you know, keep on going and pass you. But you say to yourself, no, I'm going speed limit. I'm not in the fast lane. I'm in the travel lane. I can go like at this thing, and you're tailgating me, and I think that's illegal. What if I were to hit my brakes suddenly? You would smash into my rear end, and it would be your fault. And for just a split second, you say to yourself, what if I tapped on the brakes? The guy would, like, panic, go out of control, spin and crash, and probably die. And I didn't do anything wrong. I just tapped on the brakes going 65 miles an hour. But I would cause this person behind me great harm. Or they may not react and may smash into me and kill me. But would it be worth it? I think it would. My death would teach him a big lesson. And then you say to yourself, no, that's just not worth it. But you think it, don't you? There's a little animal in all of us, especially Richard Gere. If you don't know that joke, then I'm not going to explain it. It involves a gerbil on a string. Yeah, very frequently I will sit in traffic, bumper to bumper. It ain't moving at all. If we're moving, we're crawling along at 2 miles an hour, and it's just going to take forever to get where we're going to go. And you get that anxiety where I'm trapped. I can't back up. I can't go forward. I can't go left. I can't go right. I am trapped. I am literally trapped. The highway traffic has kidnapped me. I am totally and utterly trapped. And that's a feeling of anxiety for most people. It's at these times that I wish that there was some type of interphone car system. Ron, what do you mean by an interphone car system? What the hell are you talking about? Hey, don't talk to me like that. Wouldn't it be great if you were sitting in traffic? Because we all have cell phones now. Or quote-unquote car phones. We all have phones in our cars. And if we're just sitting there, sitting in traffic, what do you start doing? You start looking out your window and looking at the other people sitting in traffic and saying to yourself, oh, I wonder where they're going, or I wonder where they're not going. Every once in a while, you'll look out your car window and you'll see in the next car right next to you someone of the opposite sex. That would mean that if you're a man, you see a woman. If you're a woman, you see a man. I have to explain this to some people. I'm happily relationshiped, but I'm also not dead. And if I see an attractive person and we're just sitting in traffic, or even if they're not attractive, I don't care, really. We're just sitting in traffic. Wouldn't it be great to just get on your cell phone, you're just sitting there, and call the person in the next car over? I don't know how you would know their phone number. I don't think you can know. Maybe there's a little sign or something you can hold up when you're sitting in traffic that has your cell phone number on it. Where like, hey, I'm just sitting here in traffic. I got nothing to do. Call me. How you doing, man? You're sitting next to me in your car. How you doing? Wouldn't it be a great way to start relationships? Hi, what's your name?
My name's Susan. Where are you going?
I'm heading into Boston. What are you doing?
Me too. Me too. What are you going to do when you get to Boston?
I'm just going to pretty much hang out and
Maybe have a little dinner. Hey, that's what I'm going to do. Would you like to have dinner together? Sure, why not? Would you like to go find a hotel and screw my brains out? I really shouldn't, but yeah, sure, why not? Yeah, you only live once, right? Yeah, that's my attitude. My attitude, too. Are you married? Yes, to a mob boss. He'll probably kill you if he finds out that we're even talking together. Still want to have dinner?
No, you know, I believe traffic is starting to move. I'll catch you later. Bye.
Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be fantastic to have little relationships in cars as you're sitting in traffic? And then when traffic does pick up, you say to yourself, oh, I guess our relationship is over. No, not necessarily. I have your cell phone number. But if it's someone you don't want to talk to, and now they have your cell phone number, so that kind of wouldn't work then, would it? No, probably not. It was a lousy idea, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. But in theory, why not, man? Why not? Aren't we put on this planet to interact with each other? No, we're not. If we were put on this planet to interact with each other, we'd be extinct. This entire species would be extinct. Believe me. Here's what you've got to understand. People on the surface are just fine. They're entertaining, they're nutty, they're bizarre, they're intriguing, they're interesting. That's all on the surface. That's all based on the fact that you can just walk away from it any time with no involvement, no hard feelings. You live on the planet Earth. I live on the planet Earth. What do we have in common? We live on the planet Earth. Beyond that, we got nothing in common. Don't really care to talk to you. But as a fellow Earth participant, you know, hi, how are you? Fine, thanks, that's enough. As soon as you get into the intricate lives of people and their personalities and their likes and their dislikes and their opinions, you start to realize that I should have stayed on the surface. Digging into it, not a great idea. Now, every once in a while, you'll meet that special person where when you dig below the surface, when you get into the deep edge of the pool, you find, wow, this is like magical. This is like incredible. But very infrequently does that happen. Most of it, when you dive beneath the surface, you don't want to go there. People are fine on a very, it's like a goat. It's like when you go to a petting zoo and there's a goat standing there just chewing its kid. I don't know what the phrase is. They're just sitting there like knocking some tin cans around. It's a fucking goat. And you walk up to the goat and you pet the goat and the goat looks up and you can go and goes, bah, I don't know if that's a goat or a sheep, to be honest with you. It wasn't too great at that game in kindergarten. And the goat looks at you and you look at the goat and you pet the goat and the pet, and then the goat walks away and you walk away and we're done. You know, maybe you'll feed a couple of pellets of something to the goat. The goat will chew it and you go, oh, that's cute. Goat chewing the stuff. Goat walks away. You walk away. Experience is over. You enjoyed it. The goat enjoyed it. We're done. That's the way life really works for most people. That's why petting zoos are very successful. You see a chicken walking around, you say to yourself, there's a chicken. The chicken says to itself, there's a human. Here we go, we're done. That's where that works. You get on a horse, you get off the horse goes into the stable, you go home, we're finished. Nice surface relationship. Everybody enjoyed themselves as long as you didn't kick the horse too hard. We're done. It's when you delve deep into these people and into these animals and relationships that you start to find that the surface thing was a lot more enjoyable. I didn't know that the goat had these internal psychological problems. I was happy when I was just petting the damn goat. That was enjoyable. Now I got to find out that the goat has got some type of horrible goat disease and can't produce cheese like it used to, and it's missing one of its bowels. I mean, you know, then you start feeling sorry for the goat. You care about the goat. The goat costs you a lot of money to have to fix the goat. I was better off not knowing that the goat had problems. I was just petting the goat. That was fine. That was good. That's what I'm talking about, man. That's what I'm talking about. Do you understand me? Do you feel me? I mean, not in that sense. Do you understand what I'm talking about? That was a phrase when I was growing up. Do you feel me?
It was a weird kind of way to describe something. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you feel me? It's very bizarre. Very bizarre. Very. See me, feel me, touch me.
See me.
This is what I look like.
Feel me.
Well, that feels good.
Touch me.
You can touch me and feel me.
Heal me.
Heal me, doctor.
See me.
Here I am.
Feel me.
More feeling, that's nice. Touch me.
Touch me.
See me, feel me.
Heal me.
Heal me, feel me, see me.
See me.
See me, feel me, heal me.
Feel me.
Touch me, heal me, feel me.
Touch me.
Touch me, heal me, feel me.
Heal me.
See me, heal me, feel me, touch me.
See me.
See me, feel me, heal me, touch me.
Feel me,
touch me, heal me, see me.
Touch me.
See me.
Feel me.
Listening to you, I get the music. Gazing at you, I get the heat. Following you, I climb the mountain. I get excitement at your feet. Right behind you, I see the millions. On you, I see the glory. From you, I get opinions. From you, I get the story.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
I gotta tell you, there's a publication that I just love, and I'm not a kid, but it's National Geographic Kids, and we're all familiar with National Geographic. We all at one point in our lives collected National Geographics, thinking that we were the only people on the face of the earth that collected National Geographic editions. Like, oh my goodness, I have every edition except for a few. Well, so does everybody else, you know. So that's not a collector's item. But they are too beautiful to throw out. You can't throw these things out. That the photography, the quality of the paper of the magazine is just, it's phenomenal. It's a little book all the time. And National Geographic has turned its efforts upon kids. And I believe that that is more of an education for children than going to school is. And I truly believe that. Kids have got to learn to read again, and something that's not on a tablet, something that is a holdable magazine book of quality prints and quality pictures that don't come off of a printer, off of your laptop. I mean, we need this romantic vehicle of learning again, called books. I know a lot of kids don't understand what books are, but that's what they are. They have pages and everything. National Geographic does it better than anybody. And I was turned on by this particular subject matter, and that's animals. I just love animals. I think that we should respect, adore, put animals on pedestals, because they are just wonderful accoutrements to our beings. And let's talk to the good people at the National Geographic. Very, very cool. Hey,
good
John.
Morning.
How are you today?
I'm fine. Is this Ron?
You got Ron. Welcome to the Boston area here. Would you
good.
Would you like a cup of coffee?
Yeah, I would.
All right, I'll have it sent over to
you. I'm not that far. I'm north of you. I'm talking to you from Maine.
Oh, okay. Then I literally could send you a cup of coffee. It'd be cold by the time you got it.
Almost.
Okay. Jonathan Aldefer is a specializing in painting birds and natural history subjects, doing this for more than 30 years, and has hooked up with my favorite publication in the entire world, National Geographic. They're just the masterpiece of writings. And birds, how long have you been into birds?
Well, I guess my entire life. So it has been decades and many decades.
Wow!
But I got interested as a kid, and I wish I had had this book that we're talking about when I was a kid, because back then, you know, there were just some adult field guides, and it was a little intimidating. I stuck with it because I found it really fascinating, even as a kid. So, but this the idea for this book, this Ultimate Explorer's Field Guide to Birds, is to, you know, inspire and welcome kids, probably from the age of about 8 to 13 or 14, was our target audience.
Right.
To get them, you know, hooked into birding as an activity.
Yeah.
And it's something that you can do. You don't even need binoculars. I mean, binoculars add an extra sort of level of observation, and they bring the birds closer. But you can look at birds and identify birds without binoculars. Say for instance, if you have a bird feeder.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Near your house, they'll come right up to you.
They will. And that's exactly what I have. I've almost done like an aviary in the backyard, and I just sit there on the deck, and I'm at peace with myself, because birds to me represent freedom. They just they're so efficient, and they're just flying around, and they're colorful, and they keep to themselves, and I love it. It's a very peaceful feeling to look at birds. Are birds indeed I've heard that they're the closest to reptiles and dinosaurs and things. Is that true?
Well, the evolutionary history of birds certainly goes through the reptiles, and there have been discovered in recent decades small dinosaur-like animals, fossils of them, where they can actually see imprints in the fossil of feathers.
Wow.
So feathers probably grew out of scales, reptilian scales. But the story is not completely known yet, but because feathers and fossils are so fragile that I'm sure there's much more out there to be discovered.
You know, I think it's and this book is beautiful, by the way. It's small, it's kid size, and it's colorful, and you've done a great job of on the editing here and putting the thing together. It's got activities and jokes and bird call prompts and tips and things like that. It's great. But I think it goes a little bit further. I mean, most kids are familiar with cats and dogs. They have them in the house. They play with them. But it to me, it feels like ownership. Like these are my cats. These are my dogs. Birds are different. You don't own birds. You gaze upon their life and their community, and it's different. And I think it gives a kid an appreciation for, I wouldn't say wild things. I don't like the word wild, but for things that are beyond their domestic realm. It's good to have that appreciation.
There is, you know, it is a way of, it's an intersection with, with the natural world.
Exactly.
And I would venture to say that birds are, you know, there birds are everywhere. And I was going to say, I'd venture to say that probably you would be hard pressed to say, I haven't seen a bird today.
True.
You know, they're here in the winter, they're here in the summer. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of different variety, many different species, many different lifestyles. If you go to the beach, you're going to see a totally different set of birds than you would, in the forest.
They've
adapted to different living conditions and different feeding conditions. And one of the joys of birding actually is, you know, putting a name to a bird. That seems a little pedestrian on the surface, but it's kind of the entry point of, okay, now I know this is a, you know, a downy woodpecker. Right. Now I can learn, if I'm interested, I can learn more about how it lives, where it nests. Does it build a nest? No. It digs out a cavity in a tree and nests in a, in a cavity. Things like that. What does it eat? What, you know, does it live here year round or does it migrate? Well, downy woodpeckers live here year round.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, putting a name to a bird, you know, sort of gives you an entry point, and that's, kids are, you know, we wanted to have something where kids could feel, that they could do that for themselves if they wanted to.
It also, it goes into, an appreciation for ecology and our world and our globe. When you see birds sitting on tree limbs and enjoying the woods and the trees, you have to say to yourself, my God, we're knocking forests down. That's the homeland of not only birds, but of many other animals. You start to get a layered appreciation for things that even go beyond the animals, like how these animals actually survive, what their world is like. They need those trees. They they provide the world for them. And so your mind, you know, for a kid, it's, you start opening these layers up, which I like.
That's true, and we try to do it in a way that you know isn't sort of preaching to the, you know, about conservation. We try to keep it in a way that says, oh well, that's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that, and so you mean, you know, if that tree isn't there, that bird won't be able to live here. You know, so there's that interconnection of, well, that's basically what ecology is, you know, the interconnection of of habitats and animals and you know, our natural environment.
Right. Yeah, and it's also a great idea to have a kid set up a bird feeder with the parent in the backyard. There's an also connection between parents and kids when you start doing things like that.
That's a nice connection.
Yeah. So here's the bottom line, everybody. Go out and get this book, and don't even argue with me. The book book is a National Geographic Kids Ultimate Explorer Field Guide, and it's birds, and it's available everywhere, I assume, but certainly online.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you have a books and mortar bookstore, you could you'll find it there, I'm sure. It was published just recently.
Right.
You know, online booksellers, I think places like Amazon have a feature where you can look inside the book, and you can get an idea of what the pages are like, and you know, show your kids what it looks like and say, does this interest you? And I think with a little guidance from parents, it's a great way to get your kids a different experience, an unplugged experience, shall we say, that, you know, where they're outdoors, and it's something you can do with your kids as well.
Absolutely, and you don't have to live in Maine to enjoy nature. Nature is everywhere. Probably more so in
That's
Maine.
Right.
Though. Okay. Jonathan.
Well, you know, I lived in New York City for a while, and Central Park was a great place to go birding.
It really was. Yeah. I mean, and of course, there are more pigeons than anything, but they're pretty cool too. I don't know. I find them fascinating as well. They're like big birds.
Interesting.
Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. Pleasure speaking to you, and everybody go out and get the book. Is there some way they can hook up with you and follow your adventures?
Well, if you know, on Amazon, my website is sort of down right now,
okay.
But on Amazon there's a an author's page.
Okay.
if they searched my name, Jonathan Alderfer, they could get to my author's page. There's kind of a cool little time-lapse video of me painting a some beautiful ducks called Harlequin ducks.
Wow.
That's on the Amazon website. That might be interesting.
Hey, thanks for bringing us into this other world. We appreciate it. Jonathan Alderfer, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Ron. Good talking to you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye.
Well, interesting stuff. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Nice man. He's a nice man. I have a few bird feeders in my backyard. And on a nice day, I'll sit there and I'll watch the birds feeding in the bird feeder, and it's just so cathartically relaxing, especially with a martini in my hand. That makes it even better. And it's my relaxation. It's my meditation. My method of doing it is just watching these other living things who don't have cars, they don't have boats, they don't go out to restaurants. The birds, they swoop in, take some bird seed, and they leave. Nice. Nice stuff. Nice job if you can get it. Although I enjoy being a human being. Not so bad. Not so bad. Have yourselves a wonderful day. Let's try that again, because that was just really screwy. I mean, I'm a talk show host, and yet I couldn't close off my own show, and that's pathetic. So here we go. So join me again tomorrow, at which time we will gather together again for more conversation that you won't be participating in. You just listen to me. Until then, I wish you peace. How is that? Was that better? You didn't like it? No? Oh, figures. Get out of here.